Sunday 23rd of September, part of the Creation Series with the speaker Dr. Jeremy Kidwell.
We're continuing in our Creation Tide theme of looking at the environment and our stewardship of God's creation. And we're especially pleased to have with us today as our preacher, Dr. Jeremy Kidwell, who's a lecturer in the Department of Theology and Religion at Birmingham University and also a Methodist minister. So we look forward to what Jeremy will have to share with us later on.
All right, can you hear me all right? I'm a loud American, so it shouldn't be too bad, generally. Thank you very much for this invitation to speak. It's a real pleasure to come and speak about something that I'm quite passionate about. I want to just open by asking a quick question. How many of you felt that storm that we had a few nights ago? All right, some of you are good sleepers, I'm glad to hear that. But most of us felt, I mean, it was quite a bluster blowing through. When I grew up, which was in Seattle, lots of mountains and trees back then, we had lots of good storms and you could hear the trees moving. And that's just a sound that, I don't know, I sort of naturally soothes me. So I love a good storm. You can hear the majesty of God, something so powerful, so much more powerful than yourself. It's a bit scary as well, but generally I love a good storm. Now, one of the things about that storm, which you've probably already heard on the BBC, which I found quite a bit strange, was that that storm wasn't just ours. It was shared by some of my friends in America, that is on the East Coast. Because, of course, that storm was part of quite a significant hurricane that sort of blew over towards Britain, and that's usually what happens. There are these massive storms that affect my friends who live in Florida and New York, and all across the seaboard. And then we get a bit of a bluster, but we're not our houses aren't being blown off the island or anything like that. But it's a reminder to me about how interconnected our world is. It's a bit unnerving for me to be walking around and thinking about maybe some friends who might be suffering, who might even be relocating in the midst of what's a fairly ordinary, blustery day for us. But weather like that reminds me of the ways in which our world is interconnected. It's also a bit unnerving to think about how big these storms are getting. This last season, there was a bit of noise among meteorologists in that one particularly noteworthy meteorologist suggested that we need a new term to talk about hurricanes. That is, we've got Category 1 through Category 5, and a Category 5 is a storm that we categorize based on wind speed, which is about up to 200 miles an hour. Has anyone ever been in a 200-mile-an-hour wind? I haven't. I've gotten past 100. Living in Edinburgh, that did happen more often than one would expect. But once you get to 200 miles per hour for winds, you've got Category 5. Now, the problem is storms are getting stronger. So strong, in fact, that this meteorologist was wondering whether we need to create something called Category 6 to describe storms. That is, we're off the map in terms of how we measure storms. We know, I'm a Christian ethicist, so I do lots of constructive kind of engagements with Christian theology, and that means that I'm often sitting in a room full of people who don't really think anything of theology, so say me and a bunch of climate scientists or environmental scientists, I'm the only one in the room, the only theologian. So I get to hear lots of things about things like climate change, and one of the things that I've heard is that these storms are being intensified because of what we're doing to the atmosphere. When you put carbon into the atmosphere, it unsettles lots of different Earth systems, and we get really strong storms. Another thing that happens when you mess with the atmosphere is you get lots of heat waves. We experienced that also this summer, didn't we? It was quite pleasant in Birmingham, I have to say. I enjoyed my gardening when it was, past 30 degrees. There are lots of places in Europe where significant heat caused a lot of hardship for people. Floods as well, because we've taken out a lot of our beautiful trees, we're more susceptible to flooding now, and because the rains are heavier, we've got big storms. So now all of these things, to me, I said that I love the majesty of a storm, but I also find them a bit frightening. These are new, uncharted waters, and it's very strange to think about weather doing these kinds of things to us. And this reminds me of another storm, of course, that we read about in the New Testament. That is in Luke chapter 8. There's a storm, of course, with Jesus and his disciples. They crawl into a boat. They're riding this boat to go from one place of preaching to another place, and a storm comes up. And Jesus, of course, being the creator of the universe, goes to sleep knowing that things will be fine. And his disciples see that the wind kicks up. And it's something like what we've just had, except they're stuck on a boat in the middle of the sea. And so, of course, they're terrified. And they wake up Jesus. And Jesus, you can probably remember his reply, is, I don't know if it's annoyed or maybe bemused, but he says, "Why are you afraid?" Now, one of the interesting things about the storm, that little story, is that Luke also tells us they were in danger. So it's not that they were blowing it out of proportion, they were being a bit melodramatic. Actually, they were in danger. At least that's what Luke tells us. And yet Jesus still turns around and says to them, "Why are you afraid?" That's the kind of question that I want us to explore this morning. Fear. I think there are a lot of people who do environmental work who assume that quite a lot of us just don't care, and that's why we've got all of these environmental problems. I don't think that's true. I've talked to way too many people to have a clear sense that generally everyone is concerned about what's happening to our Earth. We're concerned about different bits of it, perhaps. If you're a farmer, you're concerned about the soil. You know, if you're someone living in urban Birmingham, perhaps we're a bit worried about a lack of green space or the air. But whatever it is, we've all got some concerns. We know that the way that we're living on this earth, on God's good creation, is not quite right. So this phrase, "Why are you afraid?" could come across to those skeptics. Say, yeah, all of those people out there, they're just saying, "Why be afraid? It's just weather. It's just a bit of a storm. It's happened before." But that's not what Jesus is saying in this story. I think we might take this question in a different direction. And what I want to suggest this morning is that hope is a risky thing. Finding hope is challenging. Of course, there's lots of different Old Testament and New Testament stories that we could turn to think about incidences where people are afraid, bad things are happening, and they find hope. We could think about Noah, which you just heard about, last week, I think. And what's interesting about that story is that everyone else around Noah, they're not afraid at all. So, you know, "Why are you afraid?" is what they were saying to Noah. And unfortunately, they should have been a bit more concerned. They should have heeded the words of their friend. We get something similar with Jeremiah, where he's trying to speak to the people of Israel and warn them that the ways in which they're living are so out of alignment with God's purpose that things are just going to fall over. But they don't. We could look forward to Joseph, who comes and warns Pharaoh, "These things are going to happen. I've seen a vision." And interestingly enough, and it's always the non-believers who do the most remarkably faithful things, of course, you know, in the Old Testament. Pharaoh turns around and mobilizes the whole empire. "We're going to respond to this prophecy. We're going to protect our people from drought." So each of these incidences, we have some kind of an occasion where there's a reason to be afraid. Some of them not so different from what I'm talking about in terms of storms and climate. There's lots of different responses. And so I think it's not just about being hopeful. Another way of saying that is just smiling and sort of carrying on and being cheerful even when Rome is burning around us. That's not hope. That's folly, if we're being honest. Hope is something different. Hope is something more complicated. One of the interesting things for me in all of these different contexts that are full of scientists that I often find myself in is I often find myself wondering, what's the purpose of a theologian here? I mean, I could just know the climate change literature and I could reflect the statistics to you and we could all become educated about the environment, and that's very important, but I think, or at least I'd like to suggest, that theology, that is Christian spirituality, actually has something unique to bring to this situation. That is, perhaps we here, practitioners and perhaps experts at Christian spiritual discipline, might actually have a gift to bring to those around us in these times. So We know that we live in a world that is fragile. That is, this is a world, as the opening chapters of Genesis tell us, which is overwhelmingly, resoundingly good and full of purpose. Just go back through Genesis and read that sometime and notice how often the word good appears. Now, the human creature in the midst of this world falls, is susceptible to sin, but the world carries on. And if you pay close attention to it, it really is amazing what God has put in place around us, the dynamism and the beauty of the creation, and the strength. I mean, it's just even to pay attention to plants and the ways that they can adapt to threats. It's amazing. God made these things with such purpose. But our world is also fragile. I mean, if there's one thing that we can take away from the crucifixion, it's that God does not make a world that is immutable. Even his own son could be crucified. Now, of course, the resurrection, which is a very, very important end to that story, tells us that God's purposes always overwhelm evil. But nonetheless, this is a world, in spite of its dynamism and beauty and strength, which is fragile. And that's part of why I wanted to read this story from Matthew. I think that is, it's interesting to me that this beautifully Christological story, that is, I mean, the Pharisees know exactly what he's talking about, right? They're angry at the end. It's also one of the most ecological. Think about the symmetries between that story in Genesis and that story in Matthew. A vineyard planted in some unknown place or a garden, filled with human tenants who misbehave and mistreat it. And that's the perfect parable for what we're doing on this earth right now in so many ways. Now, there are good people on this earth. God made us not just to be here and to sin and to fall, to pollute. He put us here to care for it. And caring, of course, involves action. And every time I give a talk on climate change, the first thing everyone wants to know is, okay, what do we do? We understand the problem. Give me a list. Give me 15 things to do to take away with me. And those lists are very important, and I've got them. If you want to have one of those lists, we can chat, and I'll email it to you. But I don't want that to be the first thing that we theologically formed people take away from that situation. I want to suggest that this feeling, when we see the storm and we feel afraid, is theologically important. It is important for us. It is, in fact, a gift from our Creator to feel powerless. It opens us up to look around, to think about who we are and how we're living, to think about our own resources, to realize what we need. So I want to suggest that when we are vulnerable, we are drawn to God. This is a little bit like Jesus. You read across the Gospels, he keeps trying to retreat to places to pray, and people keep finding him and asking him questions. But in a sense, that's us as well. Like a magnet, we're drawn to our Creator, to abide in him. So, I just want to end to talk, just give you a few things as I close, in terms of a pathway. So if we're going to really take seriously our own vulnerability, if we're going to take seriously the idea that this pathway towards hope is one we must tread carefully. It's not just being hopeful, but it's the way we get there. I want to give you three things that you might consider as perhaps signposts along the path. I want to argue for a kind of contemplative ecology, not an activist one, but a contemplative one. And I realize this is dangerous because we don't just want to sit around and do nothing, and there's a lot of people that are afraid that we're doing that too much. But nonetheless, we people who are formed by the triune God and a relationship need to think a little bit about that connection. So the first thing is prayer. I think what we should be doing is praying for our earth. One of the things I do on a fairly regular basis is to go out, and there's a government agency, the IUCN, that publishes a list of threatened species. It's called the Red List. I get the Red List, I print it out, and I pray for the creatures on that list. These are insects and mammals and plants that could be wiped off the face of the earth simply because we're not being careful with them. I pray for those things. Not because I know that that will rescue them, but because I think that prayer is an important way of focusing our attention and abiding in God and paying attention. Okay, so prayer. We could pray for our flooded lands. We could pray for our soil. We can pray for ourselves and our communities, that we find ways through ways of living more lightly upon this earth. Next thing is fasting. Fasting is something which, in the Christian tradition, always goes with feasting. You never do a fast without having a feast. Of course, you never have a feast without a fast, but they go together, right? It's not just about avoiding things and avoiding things forever. It's about avoiding certain beautiful things so that when you return to them, you're reminded of their beauty and the fact that they're a gift, right? So let us, perhaps, set aside some of our luxuries, like driving to places, and like using a lot of gas, and like having the heat on. We can use blankets and coats. There are lots of different luxuries which we enjoy, plastic, which we can set aside so that when we use them, we can realize what a gift they are. Think about what it would be like if we couldn't have plastic. There are heart valve replacements, which needs things like that, right? What if we use it all up? We need to realize that these are special things. These are gifts which we've been given to care for in that vineyard. Finally, I want to suggest abiding is something we might consider. Sitting somewhere and paying attention to the place where you are. Not as recreation. It's good to have the spirit uplifted by the beauties of nature, but it's also good to pay attention to places. We love the things that we know. And if we don't know the creatures around us, it's very hard to love them in meaningful ways. So think about those three things, prayer and fasting and abiding, as hallmarks of a kind of contemplative ecology. And I'd like to suggest, then, a Christian response to something like climate change or soil erosion or ocean pollution. All of these things that are on our minds that concern us might not be inaction, not doubt, but not precisely action either. I think that the Christian way into action is through contemplation and through a life of spiritual discipline. So I want to ask, as I finish today, is your spiritual practice engaged with God's good world? Thank you.
A moment quietly reflecting on what Jeremy has said and asking God to speak through it and perhaps challenge different amongst us in different ways, but let's invite God to speak to our hearts through what we've heard this morning. Father, we thank you.